Welcome to Enabled, the weekly program about people just like you who are dealing with issues of vision loss. The program is designed to encourage you through news you can use, inspirational stories, and interviews. I'm Nancy Zimmer, your host for Enabled. Thank you for joining me. Today, I'll start with a definition. Universal design is the design of an environment so that it can be accessed, understood, and used to the greatest extent possible by all people, regardless of their age, size, ability, or disability. In this program, you'll hear about the work in universal design that is being done by Chris Downey, an architect who is blind. But first, you'll hear his TED Talk titled Design with the Blind in Mind. And by the way, TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. The TED Talk is titled Design with the Blind in Mind. This is by Chris Downey. This was originally given in November of 2013. He starts out by saying, "So, stepping down out of the bus, I headed back to the corner to head west en route to a Braille training session. It was the winter of 2009, and I had been blind for about a year. Things were going pretty well. Safely reaching the other side, I turned to the left, pushed the auto button for the audible pedestrian signal, and waited my turn. As it went off, I took off and safely got to the other side. Stepping onto the sidewalk, I then heard the sound of a steel chair slide across the concrete sidewalk in front of me. I know there's a cafe on the corner and that they have chairs out in front, so I adjusted to the left to get closer to the street. As I did, so slid the chair. I figured I'd made a mistake, and I went back to the right. So slid the chair in perfect synchronicity. Now I was getting a little anxious. I went back to the left, and so slid the chair, blocking my path of travel. Now I was officially freaking out, so I yelled, 'Who the hell's out there? What's going on?' Just then, over my shout, I heard something else, a familiar rattle. It sounded familiar, and I quickly considered another possibility. I reached out with my left hand as my fingers brushed against something fuzzy, and I came across an ear, the ear of a dog, perhaps a golden retriever. Its leash had been tied to the chair as her master went in for coffee, and she was just being persistent in her efforts to greet me, perhaps to get a scratch behind the ear. Who knows, maybe she was volunteering for guide dog service." But he continues and says, "That little story is really about the fears and misconceptions that come along with the idea of moving through the city without sight, seemingly oblivious to the environment and the people around you." So let me step back and set the stage a little bit. On St. Patrick's Day of 2008, I reported to the hospital for surgery to remove a brain tumor. The surgery was successful. And 2 days later, my sight started to fail. On the third day, it was gone. Immediately, I was struck by an incredible sense of fear, of confusion, of vulnerability, like anybody would be. But as I had time to stop and think, I actually started to realize I had a lot to be grateful for. In particular, I thought about my dad, who had passed away from the complications from brain surgery. He was 36. I was 7 at that time. So although I had every reason to be fearful of what was ahead and had no clue what was going to happen, I was alive. My son still had his dad. And besides, it's not like I was the first person to ever lose their sight. I knew there had to be all sorts of systems and techniques and training to have a life, to live a full and meaningful active life without sight. So by the time I was discharged from the hospital a few days later, I left with a mission to get out and get the best training as quickly as I could and get on to rebuilding my life. Within 6 months, I had returned to work. My training had started. I even started riding a tandem bike with my old cycling buddies and was commuting to work on my own, walking through town and taking the bus. It was a lot of hard work, but what I didn't anticipate through that rapid transition time was the incredible experience of the juxtaposition of my sighted experience up against my unsighted experience, of the same places and the same people, within such a short period of time. From that came a lot of insights, or rather outsights, as I called them, things that I learned since losing my sight. These outsights ranged from the trivial to the profound, from the mundane to the humorous. As an architect, that stark juxtaposition of my sighted and unsighted experience of the same places and the same cities within such a short period of time has given me all sorts of wonderful outsights about the city itself. Paramount amongst those was the realization that actually cities are fantastic places for the blind. And then I was also surprised by the city's propensity for kindness and care, as opposed to indifference or worse. And then I started to realize that it seemed like the blind seemed to have a positive influence on the city itself. That was a little curious to me. Let me step back and take a look at why the city is so good for the blind. Inherent with the training for recovery from sight loss is learning to rely on all your non-visual senses, things that you would otherwise maybe ignore. It's like a whole new world of sensory information opens up to you. I was really struck by the symphony of subtle sounds all around me in the city that you can hear and work with to understand where you are, how you need to move, and where you need to go. Similarly, just through the grip of the cane, you can feel contrasting textures in the floor below, and over time you build a pattern of where you are and where you're headed. Similarly, just the sun warming one side of your face or the wind on your neck gives you clues about your alignment and your progression through a block and your movement through time and space. But also the sense of smell. Some districts and some cities have their own smell, as do places and things around you. And if you're lucky, you can even follow your nose to that new bakery that you've been looking for. All this really surprised me, because I started to realize that my unsighted experience was so far more, my unsighted experience was far more multisensory than my sighted experience ever was. What struck me also was how much the city was changing around me. When you're sighted, everybody kind of sticks to themselves. You mind your own business. You lose your sight, though, and it's a whole other story. And I don't know who's watching who, but I have a suspicion that a lot of people are watching me. And I'm not paranoid, but everywhere I go, I'm getting all sorts of advice. Go here, move there, watch out for this. A lot of the information is good. Some of it's helpful. A lot of it's kind of reversed. You've got to figure out what they actually meant. Some of it is kind of wrong and not helpful, but it's all good in the grand scheme of things. But one time I was in Oakland, walking along Broadway, and came to a corner. I was waiting for an audible pedestrian signal, and as it went off, I was just about to step out into the street. All of a sudden, my right hand was gripped by this guy, and he yanked my arm and pulled me out into the crosswalk and was dragging me out across the street, speaking to me in Mandarin. It's like there was no escape from this man's death grip, but he got me safely over there. What could I do? But believe me, there are more polite ways to offer assistance. We don't know you're there, so it's kind of nice if you'd say hello first and ask, would you like some help? But while in Oakland, I've really been struck about how much the city of Oakland changed since I lost my sight. I liked it sighted. It was fine. It was a perfectly great city. But once I lost my sight and was walking along Broadway, I was blessed every block of the way. Bless you, man. Go for it, brother. God bless you. I didn't get that when I was sighted. And even without sight, I don't get that in San Francisco. And I know it bothers some of my blind friends. It's not just me. Often it's thought that that's an emotion that comes up out of pity. I tend to think that it comes out of our shared humanity, out of our togetherness. And I think it's pretty cool. In fact, if I'm feeling down, I just go to Broadway in downtown Oakland. I go for a walk, and I feel better like that in no time at all. But also that it illustrates how disability and blindness sort of cuts across ethnic, social, racial, and economic lines. Disability is an equal opportunity provider. Everyone's welcome. In fact, I heard it said in the disability community that there are really only two types of people. There are those with disabilities, and there are those who haven't quite found theirs yet. It's a different way of thinking about it, but I think it's kind of beautiful, because it's certainly far more inclusive than the us versus them or the able versus the disabled. And it's a lot more honest and respectful of the fragility of life. So my final takeaway for you is that not only is the city good for the blind, but the city needs us. And I am so sure of that that I want to propose to you today that the blind be taken as the prototypical city dwellers when imagining new and wonderful cities, and not the people that are thought about after the mold has already been cast. It's too late then. So if you design a city with the blind in mind, you'll have a rich, walkable network of sidewalks with a dense array of options and choices, all available at the street level. If you design a city with the blind in mind, sidewalks will be predictable and they'll be generous. The space between buildings will be well balanced between people and cars. In fact, cars, who needs them? If you're blind, you don't drive. They don't like it when you drive. If you design a city with the blind in mind, you design a city with a robust, accessible, well-connected mass transit system that connects all parts of the city and the region all around. If you design a city with the blind in mind, there'll be jobs, lots of jobs. Blind people want to work, too. They want to earn a living. So when designing a city for the blind, I hope you start to realize that it actually would be a more inclusive, a more equitable, a more just city for all. And based on my prior sighted experience, it sounds like a pretty cool city, whether you're blind, whether you have a disability, or you haven't quite found yours yet. This was a TED Talk by Chris Downey, who's an architect who is blind. And for a follow-up to that, we have some questions and answers with Chris Downey. This interview was done by Interior Design Magazine with a date of June 6th of last year. It was done by April Kilcrease. As an introduction, she writes, in 2008, San Francisco-based architect Chris Downey underwent surgery to remove a benign brain tumor that was pressing against his optic nerve. The surgery was successful, but 3 days later, his sight was gone. Given the visual nature of his profession, remember he's an architect, that could have been a career-ending event. But with his 20 years of experience and 2 degrees in architecture, Downey was confident he still had much to offer. Within a month, he was back at work. Today, Downey uses his unique perspective as one of the world's few practicing blind architects. He uses his unique perspective to create dynamic environments that are accessible to everyone. Recent projects included Department of Veterans Affairs, Blind Rehabilitation Center in Palo Alto, California. He's also done renovations on housing for the blind in New York City, and he's worked on the Trans Bay Transit Center in San Francisco. Downey also helped design the Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired's new 40,000 square foot headquarters in the San Francisco mid-market neighborhood. Here, in this interview, the pioneering architect discusses the magic of multi-sensory environments. His work with ARUP, A-R-U-P, they are sound engineers, and the horrors of protruding light sconces. The first question, how did losing your sight change the way you think about and approach your work as an architect? Chris Downey answers, I tend to think of my sight loss as completing my architectural training. I used to obsess on the visual aspects of architecture. Losing my sight taught me to think about architecture in more multi-sensory ways and to think about how a broad range of people experiences design, whether it's visually, through sound, or by walking through a space. Having joined the community of people with disabilities, I am interested in bringing more people into what is thought of as normal in design and going beyond just following the accessibility code books. With that in mind, what are some things that architects should be doing to create effective environments for the blind? Mr. Downey answers, I often say that if you want to have a visual border, perhaps it ought to be tactile as well. If it's a stone tile flooring, for example, don't just use a color difference for contrast or to break down the monotony of the space. Include some tactile differences that you could feel through the touch of the cane or how your foot hits the ground. That starts to break down the space phenomenologically as well as visually. It's like applying the same rules from the sighted endeavor towards the more multisensory endeavor, and it tends to be pretty effective. A lot of the work for the blind and visually impaired is actually about increasing the visual accessibility of the environment. Only about 6 to 8% of those who are legally blind have no sight at all. So contrast, lighting levels, glare, fluctuation in light levels, all these things can increase or decrease your visual acuity. Visual contrast can be applied to baseboards, door frames, or even establishing a difference from one wall to another. In terms of lighting levels, you want evenly distributed lights. Things like bright glare from exposed bulbs or sunshine on a glossy floor are really detrimental to people with low vision conditions. The next question, are there some other common mistakes and oversights that drive you crazy? Chris Downey answers, the biggest thing in the accessibility code books that architects often don't put together is the idea of head clearance or protruding objects. If a light sconce sticks out more than 4 inches from the wall, that sconce becomes something that you can hit your head or shoulder on. Even worse, if it's sticking out further, it can catch you right in the face. And if it's a delicate light fixture, that's not good for anybody. I've been gashed in the forehead. I've caught the bottom of a sign with my face, all sorts of things. The magazine then asks, you use tools like an intact sketch pad, and that's spelled I-N, small letters, capital T-A-C-T, intact sketch pad, and an embossing printer that prints braille and tactile graphics. This is how you engage with architectural drawings through touch. What was it like to learn to read plans through touch rather than by sight? Chris Downey answers, we are taught to think of architectural plans as places to be inside, but it's so easy with your eyes just to look at the surface of a drawing, and that's what it is. It's this flat composition. When I first tried to read a tactile drawing, I really struggled with it. You have to really focus and construct a mental model based on what you're exploring through touch. Once I got to the point where I could do that, I discovered some real benefits. Vision is wonderful in that you get so much information so quickly, but it's very detached. This puts me inside architectural plans in ways that I never could when I was sighted. I am very actively thinking about the whole experience around me, whether it's moving through space or being conscious of the form, the materials, if there are windows, where the sun is coming in, and how that feels. It's like I'm standing where my finger is in the drawing. It's really kind of magical. Next, Interior Design Magazine asks, are there places that you appreciate more now for their auditory or tactile qualities? Chris Downey answers, being out here in California, I've always enjoyed the idea of outdoor living and outdoor spaces. I have a more profound enjoyment of those spaces now. The outside is so much more dynamic. There are breezes. There are sounds of a breeze through the leaves and the trees, or birds off in the distance, or kids playing, or whatever it is. I spend a lot of time on the front porch of our house, enjoying the street life and all the sounds. There's a dynamic to the environment outside that is often excluded from the interior. Interiors can become really still. Sometimes that's good, but sometimes it's nice to open up the dynamic to the outside environment. The magazine then asks, can you point to a public space that you felt really captured that exterior dynamic? He answers, one experience I often talk about is going to the Kimbrell Art Museum in Fort Worth, Texas. And for your information, this was designed by Louis Kahn, and the building is composed of a series of 16 parallel vaults, including one portico. This is the Kimball Art Museum in Fort Worth, Texas. And Chris Downey then says, I knew the building from books and magazines, but I had never been into it. My first experience was going there without sight, and some things didn't quite come together, like the acoustics. I really wanted to hear what the vaults were like and see if I could understand the form of those spaces through sound, and I couldn't. It was just completely dead. I was so disappointed. I was going all over, trying to explore the architecture, tapping my cane, clapping my hands, snapping my fingers, driving everybody crazy, trying to understand what the heck was going on. Then at one point, I turned off the side of one of the galleries and into the long exterior vault. As soon as I opened the door and my cane hit the concrete floor, I could hear the architecture. I could hear the whole length extend out in either direction. It was wonderful. I could also hear the delicate, crisp sound of people walking on the crushed gravel pathways nearby, and the sound of a fountain. Although the fountain was a good distance away, the vault captured it and just brought it there. It was hard to resist. You wanted to go there because it sounded like it was such a delightful space. The magazine asks, tell me a bit about the acoustic work you've done with the audio engineers at ARUP. A-R-U-P is how that's spelled, ARUP. Mr. Downey says, if you're trying to design strategically with acoustics, how do you do that when you can't really hear it until it's built? And by definition, it's then too late. That's where acoustic modeling and ARUP's sound lab became so important to me. ARUP can take BIM, which is building information modeling, the BIM models of an architectural space, apply all the acoustic attributes of the various materials used, and demonstrate what the space will sound like. They have a very high-end sound lab that sonically puts you inside the acoustic model. Basically, the way it works is I tap my cane. They record that as a source file, and they put it inside the space. They can actually have me walking through the building with that tapping sound, just as you would in animation of someone walking through the space. And you can hear how the sound evolves based on how the architecture shapes it. You can hear alcoves or openings, things you learn to listen for when you're using a cane. In that way, the ARUP Sound Lab allows you to test designs and work for greater acoustic difference and clarity. The magazine then says, you worked with ARUP on designing the acoustics for the San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired. How did that influence the building's design? He answers, when I lost my sight, I had no experience with blindness or anybody that had been through that. It can be pretty scary. The San Francisco Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired is a place to go and be inspired by the possibilities. We really wanted a place that's uplifting, dynamic, and full of chances to meet and talk with people. There are a lot of serendipitous conversation places. The acoustics really support that, too. You can hear what's going on, but it's not overwhelming. Rather than have three separate floors, such as in a high-rise, we put in new stairs to connect all three floors through the lobby on the middle floor. If you're sighted, you can see that there's more to this organization than that one floor. And if you're not sighted, you can also hear activity up above or down below. The stairs are also hard instead of carpeted, which would have made them invisible. You cannot hear people going up and down the stairs if they're carpeted, but having wooden treads and risers, you can. The magazine then asks, the building sounds like a great multi-sensory experience, both acoustically and tactilely. He answered, the interior was designed with physical engagement in mind. The handrails aren't your classic round handrails. They are molded to fit the grip of your hand. The reception desk has places where you can lean your cane against the countertop, and it won't slide off and crash onto the floor. All those little details speak to the level of care involved. At the same time, nothing screams that it's adapted for people that are blind and visually impaired. It's not an environment full of band-aids. It's all integrated into the architecture. If you didn't know what you were walking into, you would think, oh, this is a cool space. But if you're blind, you're thinking, wow, this is a really cool space. The next section says, how does thinking about multisensory design benefit everyone? Every place is going to be a multi-sensory environment unless you make it so flat that it's almost unreal. No sound, nothing really to experience. In which case, it's a pretty dreadful space. It's really about striking that right balance. You want enough sound so that it's lively and dynamic, but not so lively and dynamic that it's acoustically oppressive and hard to have a conversation. Earlier this week, I traveled through some airports that are carpeted everywhere. It was really dead and flat. You never heard footfalls or roller bags. You didn't hear the liveliness of the space. I think there are some great airport concourses where there's some excitement in the space. It's because you can hear the sound of travel, the sound of people moving around. And then they asked for some current or upcoming projects that you're particularly excited about. He said there are some confidential projects that I can't go into just yet. It's in the museum setting, and I'm pretty excited about it. Whether it's science, art, or history, museums typically exclude people who are blind or visually impaired. Sure, you might be able to get around in the space, but it's really hard to enjoy the content, the real reason that you're there. And it's hard for you to share in the cultural institution. I'm interested in working with museums to make sure that they're doing more than just focusing on the visual aesthetic and instead working on the whole multisensory aesthetic. From his website, Christopher Downey's website is www.archforblind, A-R-C-H, the numeral 4 in the word blind.com. It reminds you that Christopher Downey, AIA, is an architect, planner, and consultant who lost his sight in 2008. Today, he's dedicated to creating more helpful and enriching environments for the blind and visually impaired. He consults on design for the blind and visually impaired, encompassing specialized centers as well as facilities that serve the broader public. As one of the few practicing blind architects in the world, Chris Downey has been featured in local, national, and international media stories. He speaks regularly about architecture and visual impairment. He also teaches accessibility and universal design at the University of California at Berkeley, UC Berkeley. And he serves on the board of directors for the Lighthouse for the Blind in San Francisco. He starts every day rowing with the East Bay Rowing Club on the Oakland Estuary before he commutes on public transit to his office in San Francisco. Well, to end today's program, here's a quote for you to think about, and it comes from the man of the hour himself, the architect Chris Downey. He said, "Great architecture for the blind and visually impaired is just like any other great architecture, only better. It looks and works the same while offering a richer and better environment for all the senses." Thank you for listening, and I hope you have a great week. You've been listening to Enabled, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. Our technical director is Maureen Rich, and I'm Nancy Zimmer. I hope you'll join me again next week for more updates and information and encouraging stories. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can listen to it at our website, wxxi.org.